Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTillo along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, Charlie Long in studio at 545. Steve Geller will join us for our triple option feature at 520 from Clutch Sports. Chris Dotson will join us, and he covers the Pelicans, and we'll break down the 2024-2025 schedule for the Pelicans. A texter asked about, because we brought it up, it was actually Jin Hale that brought it up last week about, take a good look at the Tampa Bay Bucks schedule as the division champs, how they open. Week one, they play the Washington Commanders, rookie quarterback, and Jaden Daniels. Week two, tough. You play the Detroit Lions. Week three, Denver Broncos. Bo Nix, most likely going to be the starter as a rookie. You play Philly in game four. Man, I have no idea what Philadelphia Eagle team you'll see based off of what you saw at the beginning of last year and at the end.
Beginning, it was like, well, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Well, what were they, 9-1, 10-1?
And then
they fell off the face of the earth.
And then after that, they play Atlanta and the Saints.
No, it's good.
Look at that schedule, and everybody wants to sort of give the division to the Falcons now because of Simmons and Matt Judon, and I get that part. Those are two big additions to the lineup, man.
Well, to me, Mike, they're giving, from a national perspective, more of a division to the Falcons. I even hear national shows.
Because of Kirk Cousins.
Without a doubt, because they say they got they didn't have the trigger man. They got the offensive skill position. The offensive line is amongst the best. I'm not saying the Detroit Lions offensive line, but
it's pretty doggone good.
And so they view that Kirk Cousins could be that difference maker. And Mike, talking like all of a sudden, don't be surprised if Atlanta's not sneaking into the playoffs to be like a number three seed. They kind of look at the 49ers and you look at the Lions, but
Packers,
But then you look, they said, oh no, the Falcons are going to be right there with the Packers. I don't know. I'm just saying national shows how they have no dog in the fight, how they view the NFC South and where Atlanta's at right now.
But I think Jim might be right about keeping an eye on the Buccaneers. And again, they've won it three straight years. Nobody thought they'd win it last year. And what they got?
Well, we all thought they would fall on the face of the earth
when
Tom Brady left.
And that wasn't the case.
No, you got to give Baker Mayfield a lot of credit.
Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to James. James, you're in the huddle with Bobby and Mike.
Guys, you know what it is, how I feel right now, I'm pretty sure. But
I know you're not happy, James.
No, I'm not. But before I get to Loomis, Deuce got it wrong, man. You know, Nico Lalos is his name. He's plenty fast enough. He runs the same time as Peyton Turner. That's why they're kicking him inside. It's just Foskey's got the fastest time, like a 4.58 to 4.64. I thought Deuce was talking about Foskey, because he's the one that's acting like, besides beating Penning inside, he's the only. I mean, he acts like he's out of his league right now. So, but I mean, let's take this.
Well, he's big enough, James. And look, Nico Lalos. I think he goes by Nico, whatever. If you look at him, he's plenty big enough. He's 6'5", 270.
Plenty big enough.
But what he
meant was, what Deuce I thought was trying to say was, his the moment is too big for him. Like
he can beat the UFL players.
There's another level he can't reach. And I would say the same thing for Foskey. You know, Notre Dame and SEC, and he's been acting like, you know, he's not in the same league. But listen, I know this is the Saints and Pelicans radio station, but come on. Mickey Loomis, Jason Light's been beating the brakes off of him over at Tampa. The staffer, now at Atlanta, has been just, I mean,
Terry Fontenot.
We're going to play checkers.
No, so you're saying like the students beating Fontenot, the teachers beating the students beating the teacher. Is that what you're saying, Fontenot?
And then Dan Morgan, he was here for a hiccup, for like a cup of coffee. But Dan Morgan at least got a plan. He's copying off of, you know, the same format. Get the two guards, slab in the middle to protect the little midget at quarterback, like we did with Drew. Everybody's got a plan, and Loomis is, you know, he stinks right now. I mean, Atlanta had the worst cap situation, and you let him go. You basically gave the division up. That's facts. It's not, you know.
But when you say it's facts, you have to let it play out first. Now, you might say the odds might be in Atlanta's favor.
You're right about that because they are not that. I mean, you know, they might have the talent or whatever they're doing, but they are not that. I mean,
you got to go do it.
I don't want to see Tampa win either. I want us to win. My Sunday's going to be terrible. You know, it is what it is. I mean, unless they do something. And you got to get rid of Penny.
You can't be like Eeyore, James. You can't be like, oh, woe is me, before actually something happens to be real discouraged. You can't be that.
Everybody knows, Bobby, everybody knows you got to get rid of Penny. And Landon Young is trash. I'm just.
Who, Landon Young? Yeah, his competition.
He's trash. You can't. And the thing, listen. 10 years in, that David Carr's worst trade is processing.
No, David's his brother, Derek Carr.
Whoever. Carr, the starting quarterback for the Saints.
Okay.
His worst, he's 10 years in right now, and his worst trade is processing. So you mean to tell me the starting safeties, the best in the league, we talked about the other day, Mike.
Yep, that is. That is true.
Best in the league. You mean to tell me they're not gonna pick him off? And you know what's crazy about it is Atlanta's new defense and Carolina's new defense are the same. They're gonna move and try to find a weakness and put their main guy. Now, this for Atlanta's concern, they can stick Grady Jarrett right there against Ruiz, who he beats up every time. You know, if he's healthy. But now you got Judon. I mean, you know, it's a mess, man. You got to get the line fixed. Unless there's no. Why wouldn't he meet that mark of $7 million or whatever? You rather pay
$8 million.
Whatever it is, you rather pay Cam for 771 plays or 2 sacks? Come on.
That'll be interesting. No, James, that's a good point. And Mike, that's why I'd ask you. And I don't know, that might be the case or it might not. I would think the Saints would have given Justin Simmons the exact same contract that Atlanta did. But that doesn't mean, James, right now he's coming to the Saints. I'll tell you, a lot of African-Americans, I'll tell you this, who I play with, they want to live in Atlanta versus New Orleans.
The other thing, too, is maybe Justin Simmons felt, I got a better chance to get playoff money in Atlanta.
Atlanta, right now, like where the potential and where it's at for the upcoming season. And then look, he gets to play by one of the best safeties, so they can complement one another with Bates.
And you got Raheem Morris as your head coach. Okay, what is, you know, his wheelhouse?
Defense. Right.
And so, man, yeah, they had a lot of things going. Now the cap space, James, you right? Okay, in 2 days. There's no way, and without some restructuring they did with Chris Lindstrom, who they can go to for money and kind of work around it. But to fit Justin Simmons and Matt Judon in, you had to go to the bank somewhere with another player.
Well, the Fontenot and the Falcons, a lot of teams, when you're pushing it down the road and they want the win-now mode, the Falcons could copy and see what the Saints did in past years.
No, Fontenot was in this front office all those years.
Right, that's why I say he's the pupil, the student, and Mickey was like the teacher. And then it's all, you know, it's kind of like one of his kids going to have success, but you don't want the pupil to beat. Not so fast, but young'un. Now, because Fontenot, Mike, the Falcons, they can't go 7 straight seasons not being in the postseason.
No, I know one thing the owner hears about it. No, you can't go around Atlanta, Georgia, and not hear about it. And so the owner feels that heat, too, and he ain't getting no younger. He's in his 80s, off the blank.
And the Falcons have to be relevant because they're not even second fiddle. They might be they're right there with the Hawks. Because right now it's either Georgia Bulldogs, the number one team in the nation, or the Atlanta Braves. Yeah, and then he starts to say, well, what does the Falcons have to do? They got to win. So they got to win now to be relevant. And, Mike, I think, where did I hear this? I think I might have been doing a show in Atlanta on one of the radio stations that I think people are so optimistic. I think they're what do they call their stadium? Mercedes Stadium?
Mercedes
They sold out. That's how right now, and they got a waiting list now because they think they're getting ready to turn the corner this year, next year. I'm almost sure.
You think about Atlanta. It reminds me of when I was doing my draft book. We had all these people from Florida order the book, and ain't none of them were Bucks fans, Dolphins fans, or Jaguar fans. They were Jets, Giants, Philadelphia Eagles. They were all kind of snowboard people that came down to the South to sort of retire. And in Atlanta, Bobby, you lived there a long time. How many people actually grew up in that area?
And grew up in Georgia. All of my neighbors, now was Country Club of the South. They, none of them were from Georgia. And I tell you this, how it's an attractive city. In our neighborhood, in Country Club of the South, in Alpharetta, Georgia, they had 22 professional athletes, whether it was Major League Baseball, NBA, or the NFL. And I'd say half of them never even played in Atlanta. They might have played for the Jets. They lived there in the offseason. You know, when I was moving, you know who wanted to buy my house? Chris Webber. You ever heard of Chris Webber? You remember what? Did he ever play for the Hawks? No, it was the Sacramento Kings or something. You know, I'm just telling you, that's one thing they got going for them as far as attracting players, where you want to live. Now, like I've said this before, the only other city where the African-American NFL players I know more than in Atlanta is Los Angeles. Los Angeles won, Atlanta too. I don't know where even New Orleans is. You almost have to play for the Saints to want to make this your home.
We'll be back with more sports talk and Chris Dotson from Clutch Points talking about the Pelicans schedule, which was released today right after this break.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelier along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line from Clutch Sports, Chris Dotson covers the Pelicans, breaking down what was released today, the Pelicans 2024-25 schedule. Chris, thanks so much for joining us. I was telling this to Charlie. Man, right off the bat, when you look at that schedule, it's the month of February that jumps out to me. Okay, 13 national TV games. That's great for the Pelicans. But Mardi Gras is a little bit later this year than normal. It's March 4th. But the month of February, you play at Denver, at Sacramento, at Oklahoma City, back-to-back games against Sacramento, at Dallas, San Antonio, San Antonio, Phoenix, Phoenix. Man, and normally that's the type of year, you know, man, somebody got a bubble. Oh, man, my back, I got a soft tissue injury or whatever. Take a look at that schedule in the month of February.
Hey, look, I'm glad you said it because that's exactly what I'm looking at. I think you left off the Kappa, though. On Mardi Gras Day, March 4th, we play the Lakers, so after the parades, we still got some things to look forward to. But, yeah, I'm looking at the month of February. Yeah, looking at the month of February, starting at Denver, you know, the Mile High. But then you got Sacramento, 3 games in 6 days, and we've had their number. So there's a way we can make a lot out of that month if we just take care of business against a few teams. And then they got the Spurs, a few teams that you should take care of. I'm not too worried about February. If they take care of that business, but I'm so much looking forward to that Mardi Gras Day game against the Lakers. I mean, that's got to be the best one on the schedule.
Now Chris, so, you know, obviously we're getting into football, kicking it off, but when you look at Brandon Ingram would be all right. What do you think, if you look in your crystal ball, what's going to come about with that situation?
Hey, look, I reported on it being a mob market a while back. I think that his extension number is around the $177, $187 million for the max amount of years. Obviously, the Pels and Ingram is wanting to wait that out just to see how he plays. And they both said, hey, we want to be here. We're comfortable checking it out and then seeing where we stand. It really comes down to just shooting 1 3-pointer per quarter at this point. I mean, do everything else you want to do. He was great at ball handling, but the team's asking him to just do one thing once per quarter. And right now, I mean, last year he didn't show it. And if we see that early and often, especially playing Golden State twice, they're, you know, everybody knows they shoot three-pointers. The Pelicans are going to have to shoot threes to keep up with them on the road. But a lot of that lays on Brandon Ingram, and at least we get a look at what he's going to be doing with that directive early as far as taking more threes.
One of the things, Chris, looking at the offseason, Hyde breaks down, is there a team or two say, boy, they've really gotten better this offseason, and kind of watch for them. And we've talked about Oklahoma City, you know, with all those accumulation of draft picks they've had, and they kind of just tanked a little bit and then accumulated all the picks. Now, they got one of the best teams, certainly out in the West. Is there a team or two that you really anxious to watch this year?
Yeah, you started with it, Oklahoma City. I think that we can get wild and say the league should have stepped in and said, for basketball-related reasons, we're not going to let the Thunder have Alex Caruso. That's just almost unfair. It's almost unfair. You know what I mean? And then I like what Dallas has done. They went out, they got Clay, they believe in Clay. They're going to have Derek Lively Jr., another year of experience. They brought in some other guys to help them, Najee. I mean, I'm excited, really excited to see Dallas play the Pelicans, because – you're going to know real quick who Najee liked in that locker room and who he didn't. We all know Najee ain't going to hold back no way, no how, no game. And now that he's wearing a Dallas jersey, if it gets chippy out there, I'm watching nothing but Jose and Najee. I don't think those two will be fighting, but somebody's got to hold those two back from something else. But Oklahoma City and Dallas, they just look so good and so exciting that it's going to be tough for New Orleans to pull out some wins no matter where they play those two teams.
Charlie?
Chris, circling back around to the schedule, I wanted to get your thoughts on the in-season tournament now. I think it's called the Emirates NBA Cup for 2024. It feels like the Pelicans have the group of death, right, in this group. Like the West Group C, they play Denver, they play at Dallas, they play Golden State, and they play at Memphis in November. I mean, those are all premium games in the Western Conference. It just feels like the Pelicans kind of got a tough draw with that.
Yeah, I'll call it the NBA Cup. I'm going to leave the sponsor off until they let me fly on one of them planes.
There you go.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, you look at it's the Group C. You might as well call it Group UFC, like I've heard it called. You got Denver on the 15th, but you turn around and have the Lakers at home on the 16th. Then you got to go to Dallas. Then it's Golden State. Like, they did us no favors. And looking at it, Denver has like 4 days off before they come to New Orleans for that first group stage game. New Orleans is going to be flying back home from Oklahoma City the 14th that morning and play them on the 15th. Then the 16th play Los Angeles Lakers. They've done no favors. And if the Pelicans want to write off a couple of them games in the group stage so they don't have to make another trip to Las Vegas, I can totally see how that's something the locker room would even agree with.
Now, Chris, what is your take on and obviously the point guard situation? I like those days. We had Chris Paul, you know, Crescent City connection with Tyson Chandler and David West and all that, and considering how far we went into the playoffs. But how do you evaluate, and Jose plays a lot of spirit and all that, but you want him coming off the bench. But how do you view the point guard and that leadership, being the quarterback of the Pels, you know, from the get-go? How do you view that where we're at right now? Because, McCollum, I mean, come on. No, he's off guard.
And DeJounte Murray's return to Atlanta on December 2nd.
Yeah.
Should be a fun one, too.
Yeah, that'll be a fun one. But I started going out, and I just published this over Clutch Points and said, let's look at the point guards in the division and the point guards that will be involved in the NBA Cup. Now, last year we had McCollum, the point Zion experiment. The Pelicans were all over the place with the point guard, but they had about the fourth or fifth best in that division. If you look at Murray, he's an all-star. He's an upgrade over what we gave away but he's probably still fourth if you do a power rankings of point guards when you get behind Luka, Ja Morant, Jamal Murray, and Steph Curry. Would you put Murray in front of any of those? And he's really going to be fighting with Fred VanVleet, you know, for that fifth spot. That's tough. You've upgraded on paper, but when you look at what you're playing against, I don't know if you've really closed the gap that much considering how we're going to have to sacrifice somebody and send him to the bench, which is probably going to be CJ, right? That's what we're all thinking. It's going to be CJ. So this point guard with Murray, it's an upgrade, but I don't know how much of one until we see how the system works with him running it.
Chris, I want to go back to the schedule because I think you did a great job of kind of highlighting that stretch in November. If you're looking at just the general games and like 10-game gaps, right, that stretch in the back half of November seems pretty vicious. After that Brooklyn game at home on November 11th, you go to Oklahoma City, you play Denver, the Lakers, Dallas, Cleveland on the road, Golden State at home, at Indiana, Toronto, and then Memphis. That feels like one of the tougher slates that the Pelicans have at any point throughout the course of the season, and it's early on in November.
Right, and I have in the first month, so you go from October 23rd to November 22nd, 23rd. That's when you play Golden State. I believe that Golden State Warriors game at home is a must-win. I know it's 82 games, and they say, oh, you can't look at must-win games this early. In the first month, you have three. Win the home opener against Chicago, right? You got to do that. Then you come, and you've got one lottery team. I forget who it is right off the bat.
Portland.
But then you come back to Golden
State. Yeah, Trailblazers.
Right, at home. But then you got Golden State at home. You've got to have to win that to win the season series, especially if you split those two road games that you play real early. But that 10-game slate, I mean, they're playing a lot of teams no matter where they play them. The Pelicans, I think that's their longest stretch of not having a rest advantage as well, the more I break down the schedule. So it's going to be tough to play a bunch of teams who all have NBA finals aspirations, not just playoffs. I think every one of those teams could say if things break right, even Cleveland – in Cleveland, they could make a finals run, you know, a conference finals run. Something happens to the Celtics, you never know. So that might be the toughest 10 games, and it'll be the 10 games where the Pelicans are most tired once they started breaking in and getting their second win in the season. After that first month where they've got to at least break 500.
And then looking at April to close out the season, Chris, because I like looking at the start, I like looking at the end as well. Clippers, Lakers, both on the road, so a trip to L.A. On April 2nd and April 4th. At home against Orlando, at Brooklyn, at Milwaukee, versus Miami and versus OKC to close out the season. I mean, that also seems like a pretty tough slate as well, with the only kind of cupcake being Brooklyn. I think all those other teams obviously have playoff aspirations.
At least you're seeing some Eastern Conference teams.
Yeah, no, I mean, as you kind of mentioned, Mike, with that February slate, you don't see any Eastern Conference teams. It's all Western teams.
Right, and that late game, I hate to tell you, you go into L.A. for two games. We all know players love to go to L.A. I don't think they'll be practicing too much that late in the season either, so they'll be able to have them enjoy themselves. Then you fly to New Orleans for Orlando, who's very much an improved. I'd put them maybe even third on those teams I'd want to watch on my league pass. And then you fly to Brooklyn. Look, that's hard on the body going from L.A. to New Orleans, then to Brooklyn, then over to Milwaukee, then home from Miami and OKC. I mean, the only team that might be in the lottery is Brooklyn, but they might also, I haven't looked at their schedule too much, if they've got extra rest, that's going to be a bunch of young guys wanting to prove that they still belong in this league next year. So you can't, I don't know if how easy you can write that one off. And yeah, that run-in is very tough with, what, 1, 2, 3, 4 road games against guys that, for the most part, are thinking they're going to be playing in the postseason.
Now, Chris, what are your expectations like? Okay, you look at the superstar household names. You know, we just watched the Olympics and all with Zion and the Pelicans. And then you look at Wemby, how he's representing France, but now with San Antonio. How would you look like, you know, you're taking that next step? And now it's not, you know, your first rodeo. Obviously, that's not the case with Zion. Even Wemby now, he seems like he's playing with more confidence going forward. When you break down those two players, because if you're a casual basketball fan, you know who those individuals are.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a great Styles makes fights when they come in here for a couple games. Wemby, I think, got robbed for Defensive Player of the Year. Even going back to the Utah days, we've seen Rudy Gobert get played off the court when the games really matter. We just seen that in the Olympics. And Wemby was on the court. So, I mean, you're going to see something crazy generationally, things we've never seen. I think there's a reason his brand is based around the alien. He really is one, but Zion's a one of one, too. And if he can get in his chest and move Wimby around a little bit, those arms still look a little bit like Jackson Hayes when Wimby's getting, you know, roughed up a bit. Zion can get to the foul line and play Wimby off the court that way. Just get him in foul trouble. That'll be what I'm watching for in that matchup. But as far as those two guys, they should both be in the all-NBA conversations. It, of course, comes down to health. But, I mean, those two should be the two of the top 10 faces of the league for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's arguable.
Now, Chris, when I look at Zion, maybe you can explain this to me. You remember his very first game? Didn't he jack like three-pointers? And now you'd be shocked if he shot a three-point shot. I mean, you think in the offseason he's working on if they're going to play off him? Because, you know, he can get to the basket and score at will. But, boy, if he ever develops a consistent outside shot, I'm not saying even a three-point shot, you know, a mid-range jumper or whatever. Well, what's your take on that? Because then he truly could be unstoppable.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you transitioned that over to the the mid-range. Yeah, we'll see him take some threes when he's just wide open, because we've seen he can make them at a 30, 33% clip. I don't think we'll ever see him shooting 40%. But it'll be those mid-range floaters and, you know, twin 12-footers that he needs to just stop when he sees three defenders in front of him at the restriction area. Just shoot right over them. And I think he's been working on that. Actually, I know he's been working on that more than his three-pointers. He's even taken a trip to Chicago, I do believe, to just touch base with old Spoon again, because she was somebody who started encouraging him to make that shot three, 4 years ago, I think. If you really go back on the timeline, I got video of them working on it before a game. But, yeah, I think the challenge, much like Ingram, take one three-pointer a quarter. Hey, Zion, take at least one floater or mid-range guy. Take something off the glass just once per quarter to start the season so that you're at least more comfortable with it when we start that stretch run that's going to be so tough before the playoffs.
Chris, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always great insights, bud. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
All righty. Chris Dotson, who covers the Pelicans for Clutch Points. Pelican schedule out today, and interesting that November, February, and how it ends in April.
Those are the highlights, Mike.
And those are the kind of highlights of it when you're going to take a look at it on paper. We'll be back with our triple option feature. Steve Geller joins us right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, it's our triple option feature. Steve Geller joins us. Bobby J., you go first.
Well, I think I've been sitting on this for about, I guess, week and a half, because you got to keep up with the Joneses, and, you know, you want Super Bowls, you want Final Fours and all that, and, you know, we all excited as Houdat Nation Saints fans. You know, we hosted the Super Bowl, and for the Titans game, I don't know if we're going to be completely finished with the renovation, but it should be pretty damn close, even before, you know, we kick off the season against the Carolina Panthers. So when the fans get to come and witness the new dome, the new Superdome, the new Caesars Superdome, come the last preseason game against the Titans. No, the reason why I bring that up, I look at the Cleveland Browns. You know, I remember playing one time in Cleveland. They had, let me tell you, this is old Cleveland Stadium. And whenever you played them in November and December, from afar, it looked like, oh, it ain't that bad. No, they would spray paint the mud green to make it look like grass. It was like you were playing in a cow pasture. But they don't have that no more. The NFL wouldn't, you know.
True home field advantage.
Yeah, they would nip that in the bud. But I look at the Browns appear poised right now to move out of their lakefront home. They're considering a $1.1 billion plan from the city of Cleveland to renovate their 25-year-old downtown stadium. See, I played in the one stadium before that. The NFL team made it clear that this past week and a half, that its preference, this is the Browns one, though. They said, oh, we love you, Cleveland. But their preference, when you think about that, is to build a $2.4 billion. Instead of renovating $1.1 billion, you know, the downtown stadium, they prefer the $2.4 billion dome in Brook Park, Ohio. So a completely new stadium. Now, the Browns outline the plans for a state-of-the-art facility, which they say will allow Cleveland to attract hosts, to be able to host other major events, such as the Super Bowl and Final Fours. You know, they got the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and all that, so they want to be more a destination city. No one really looks at Cleveland as a destination city. Yeah, I would go there in the summer because it's not as hot as down here, but I would never go there in the winter. But that's another story. Now, the team's lease at its current, you know, it's all about, okay, what does that lease say when you're at the downtown stadium? The team's lease at its current stadium expires after the 2028 season. You know, you think that's far away, but it's not. It's really not. So it expires in the 2028 season, and last week, a week and a half, the city proposed funding $460 million of that, splitting the cost with the Browns, you know, to get that $1.1 billion. So we'll chip in, $461 million of that to upgrade the current stadium and redevelop it, the surrounding property, like a destination along Lake Erie. But the Browns said, nah, we'd rather have that $2.4 billion dome stadium.
Guys, I'm gonna bring up Charlie's favorite player on his favorite team, New York Yankees slugger Aaron Judge.
Dude, you baited me. I thought you were going to talk about Bregman.
Judge hit his 300th home run yesterday of his career, becoming the 162nd player to ever hit 300 home runs in Major League Baseball history. But, gentlemen, he did it in 954 games. That's the fewest to reach the mark in MLB history. The fastest before that to reach 300 homers, Ralph Kiner, who did it in 1,087 games. Also, Judge surpassed Yankees legend Babe Ruth by getting 300 dingers and 3,428 career at-bats. The legendary Ruth did it in 3,830 at-bats. Judge now ranks seventh all-time in Yankees home run history. He's behind A-Rod, Yogi Berra, Joe DiMaggio, Lou Gehrig, Mickey Mantle, and the Babe.
Okay, Charlie, I'm going to throw it to you because they got rebuttal. No, I'll give you my shot.
Because it just kind of makes sense that he would hit like another kind of record-breaking home run against, a team that's going to lose 140 games this year in the White Sox when they're already up four runs. I don't know, Steve. You got to do it against the playoffs against my Astros.
Who was the guy who batted ahead of Judge? He just hit four.
Soto hit four
home runs in a row.
Steve and I were texting about this off air that the White Sox beat the Yankees in that first game, and you're like, how does that happen? And then Juan Soto comes back and hits three home runs, and they beat him in the second game. Guys, the White Sox are on a historically bad track to finish with probably close to 120 losses this year. Like, that's how bad that team is. But
you had sent me, like, the under-over for win total for the season was laughable.
Oh, no, it's just getting worse by the day. And I'll actually look up the numbers on the White Sox because I think it's pretty fascinating.
We'll be back to finish it off here in our number two of Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in our number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTillo along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, Steve Geller, and we'll have our first American Bank training camp soundbite brought to you by, again, First American Bank, head coach Dennis Allen, quarterback Jake Haner, and wide receiver Samson Nakua, who's the second most, popular Nakua in the family at this point. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, it's our triple option feature. Steve Geller joins us. Bobby J., you go first.
Well, I think I've been sitting on this for about, week and a half, because you got to keep up with the Joneses, and, you know, you want Super Bowls, you want Final Fours and all that, and, we all excited as Houdat Nation Saints fans. You know, we hosted the Super Bowl, and for the Titans game, I don't know if we're going to be completely finished with the renovation, but it should be pretty damn close, even before, you know, we kick off the season against the Carolina Panthers. So when the fans get to come and witness the new dome, the new Superdome, the new Caesars Superdome, come the last preseason game against the Titans. No, the reason why I bring that up, I look at the Cleveland Browns. You know, I remember playing one time in Cleveland. They had, let me tell you, this is old Cleveland Stadium. And whenever you played them in November and December, from afar, it looked like, oh, it ain't that bad. No, they would spray paint the mud green to make it look like grass. It was like you were playing in a cow pasture. But they don't have that no more. The NFL wouldn't,
true home field advantage.
Yeah, they would nip that in the bud. But I look at the Browns appear poised right now to move out of their lakefront home. They're considering a $1.1 billion plan for from the city of Cleveland to renovate their 25-year-old downtown stadium. See, I played in the one stadium before that. The NFL team made it clear this past week and a half, that its preference, this is the Browns one, though. They said, oh, we love you, Cleveland. But their preference, when you think about that, is to build the $2.4 billion. Instead of renovating $1.1 billion, you know, the downtown stadium, they prefer the $2.4 billion dome in Brook Park, Ohio. So a completely new stadium. Now, the Browns outlined the plans for a state-of-the-art facility, which they say will allow Cleveland to attract hosts, to be able to host other major events, such as the Super Bowl and Final Fours. You know, they got the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and all that, so they want to be more a destination city. No one really looks at Cleveland as a destination city. Yeah, I would go there in the summer because it's not as hot as down here, but I would never go there in the winter. But that's another story. Now, the team's lease at its current, you know, it's all about, okay, what does that lease say when you're at the downtown stadium? The team's lease at its current stadium expires after the 2028 season. You know, you think that's far away, but it's not. It's really not. So it expires in the 2028 season, and last week, week and a half, the city proposed funding $460 million that splitting the cost with the Browns, you know, to get that $1.1 billion. So we'll chip in, $461 million of that to upgrade the current stadium and redevelop it, the surrounding property, like a destination along Lake Erie. But the Browns said, no, we'd rather have that $2.4 billion dome stadium.
Guys, I'm gonna bring up Charlie's favorite player on his favorite team, New York Yankees slugger Aaron Judge.
Dude, you baited me. I thought you were going to talk about Bregman.
Judge hit his 300th home run yesterday of his career, becoming the 162nd player to ever hit 300 home runs in Major League Baseball history. But, gentlemen, he did it in 954 games. That's the fewest to reach the mark in MLB history. The fastest before that to reach 300 homers, Ralph Kiner, who did it in 1,087 games. Also, Judge surpassed Yankees legend Babe Ruth by getting 300 dingers and 3,428 career at-bats. The legendary Ruth did it in 3,830 at-bats. Judge now ranks seventh all-time in Yankees home run history. He's behind A-Rod, Yogi Berra, Joe DiMaggio, Lou Gehrig, Mickey Mantle, and the Babe.
Okay, Charlie, I'm going to throw it to you because they got rebuttal. No, I'll just give you my shot.
Because it just kind of makes sense that he would hit like another kind of record-breaking home run against, a team that's going to lose 140 games this year in the White Sox when they're already up four runs. I don't know, Steve. You got to do it against the playoffs against my Astros.
But then who was the guy who batted ahead of Judge? He just hit four.
Soto.
Four home runs in a row.
Steve and I were texting off air that the White Sox beat the Yankees in that first game, and you're like, how does that happen? And then Juan Soto comes back and hits three home runs, and they beat him in the second game. Guys, the White Sox are on a historically bad track to finish with probably close to 120 losses this year. Like, that's how bad that team is. But
you had sent me, like, the under-over for win total for the season was laughable.
Oh, no, it's just getting worse by the day. And I'll actually look up the numbers on the White Sox because I think it's pretty fascinating.
We'll be back to finish it off here in our number two of Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in our number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTillo along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, Steve Geller, and we'll have our first American Bank training camp soundbite brought to you by, again, First American Bank, head coach Dennis Allen, quarterback Jake Haner, and wide receiver Samson Nakua, who's the second most, popular Nakua in the family at this point. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.